Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. The topic today, of course, is let's look at this first quarter 2021 GDP number that just came out. And I want to put it in some perspective for you. It's not really 6.4%, and I'll explain why. It's really less than 1.5%. But those are the games that the media plays with the numbers, and we'll explain that. And then I want to talk about Biden's speech here a couple days ago announcing his American Families Plan. What is that? What's in that? And how does it fit in relationship to the other two government spending proposals, one of which has become a legislation, the American Rescue Plan, sometimes called COVID Relief? Okay. We'll talk about that, the COVID relief plan, which we have been in some detail already, and the American Jobs Plan. This is a proposal, not yet legislation, sometimes known as the infrastructure spending. And now the third leg of the spending tool, which is American Families Plan. How do these three fiscal spending programs fit together? What do they signify, short-term, long-term? And then we'll talk a little bit about, once again, how this thing is going to be paid for with the taxes. You know, how much, what are we talking about in terms of tax increases? Again, we've mentioned some of that. It's a moving picture here, evolving. Not all of the tax proposals are out. We'll see more of those. How much of the tax increases, mostly rolling back Trump's $4.5 trillion tax cuts, will actually pay for this spending? And how much will the government probably have to borrow to pay for this spending? Of course, we don't know what the spending totality will look like, because the infrastructure plan and the family lease plan are just on paper. And they are long term. They're not designed to impact here in 2021. They are 2022 and beyond, 8 years, 10 years. So, you know, that debate is really a debate in the ether. It's really on paper. It's not about what would be spent here this year to try to ensure that we get a sustained recovery from Great Recession 2.0 and not just a rebound like we got last year. We got a temporary rebound. If we don't really spend enough now, we will run the risk of another rebound here and not a true sustained recovery. You know, you're getting a recovery of sort. Well, it's not a recovery; it's a rebound as you open the economy, reopen the economy. That's what's going on now. It's not real growth. Growth means over and above what you had, right? It means adding to where you were. Well, we're not adding to where we were in 2019. We're recovering what was lost. A little bit of semantics here, but I think it's important. The same thing with regard to jobs, to saying, oh, we grew jobs by 1.3 million in the first 3 months. That's what Biden said in his speech. We didn't grow jobs in the economy, new permanent jobs being created and added to the base in the economy. No, we recovered jobs that were lost. You know, and we have millions more to recover. And by the way, it's not 8 million that you get the media lowballing. It's still about 20 million people out there. You know, when you count the people who are still getting unemployment benefits, and when you count the people who dropped out of the labor force because they couldn't find jobs, it's still 20 million people, not 8 million. The economy is opening up. People are coming back to services. They're not coming back to manufacturing. manufacturing, hardly got impacted during this COVID situation. Hardly. In fact, they're probably adding jobs because the demand for goods is even greater than it was in 2019. Because people can't spend the money on services, so they're spending it on goods. I mean, an indication of that is look at the profit Amazon raked in, just announced, right? Was it $44 billion? Hundreds of percent over what they were. The growth was tremendous. Well, that's because people are buying goods online and having them shipped by Amazon. Amazon's the big winner in all this. Oh, but you can't let their employees unionize and give them more money. No, no, we can't afford it, says Jeff Bezos. Nope. Anyway, we'll get to this analysis of the GDP very shortly. But just to sum up here the intro, what we're going to do is look at the family leaves plan, or families plan, I guess. You call it. It's not just about paid leave. That was just announced here this past week by Biden. And we'll look at his speech a little bit, a kind of quasi de facto address to Congress after 100 days, even though, you know, the formal address to Congress is usually made in January. Well, he appeared before Congress and made a very similar kind of presentation. Okay, so that's the topic. Let's just jump to GDP here. Look at first quarter GDP. Well, first quarter GDP, the number out, in the business media and media all over is, a whopping 6.4% annual rate of growth in the first quarter. 6.4% in one quarter, annual rate. Annual rate is the key phrase here. Really distorts how much growth is actually occurred to say annual rate of growth. You know, they like to do that. They get a big number. The media gets a bigger number, makes it look like a whopping growth. Yeah, but it's not. It's not. Annual rate distorts what's really happened. I'll explain how. You know, if you look back last year, the economy in the first half of last year collapsed by 10.5%. Based on an annual rate, that would have been a collapse of 31.4% GDP. Annual rate. Actual rate, 10.5%. Annualize that, which really is a way of saying, if the collapse continued for the next 9 months, i.e. 12 total, it would be X, right? So the collapse of 10.5% really would have been 31.4% if annualized. Well, then in the third quarter, annualized, once again, the economy recovered 33.4%. You would think that, everything's been recovered, hasn't it? We're 33 versus 31. Well, no. That's only if you play this annual rate game. 33% was not what the economy actually recovered. It recovered a little over 7% quarter to quarter. Not annual, quarter to quarter. Dropped 10.5%, recovered about 7%. About 70% or two-thirds of the economy got recovered in the third quarter. That's the true number. But they keep, hyping this 31 versus 33%. And remember, if you have a $20 trillion economy and it drops 10%, 10% of 20 trillion is 2 trillion. You've lost 2 trillion. Of economic activity. You're at 18 trillion. And then to say, we grew 7%. Well, it's 7% of 18 trillion, which is really, about 1.2 trillion. You drop $2 trillion and you gain $1.2 trillion back. It's not equal. You're not back where you were. And by any means, you do not recover at all. Again, about 2%, two-thirds of what was lost was recovered. That's a rebound. That's not a recovery. That's a rebound. Recoveries are sustained. Rebounds are temporary, followed by relapses. Well, how much did the economy grow in the fourth quarter? Again, you know, you could look at it annualized, or you can look at it true quarter to quarter. You know, every other economy in the world, advanced economy, talks about their GDP in quarter to quarter terms. You know, how much did it grow or not grow this quarter compared to the other quarter? The United States is the only one that compares it annually and says even the quarter growth compares it to the previous year's similar quarter. All these little games that are played, you see, to really boost the numbers when they want to boost them and to moderate and dampen the numbers when the numbers aren't good. But that's what the U.S. does with a lot of its statistics. Well, at least the media picks it up, you know. It's not that the Labor Department only reports, over-reports and under-reports when it suits it. No, all the numbers are there. There's some issues, of course, with some of the statistics, you know, that are distorted by the Labor Department. Like, I don't believe their inflation statistics. And the inflation estimation is important for the real GDP number, whether annualized or quarter. Right? If I lowball and underestimate inflation, then the real GDP number is going to be bigger. So the 6.4%, you know, is bigger than it really is because we underestimate inflation. You know, you reduce your nominal or inflation rate by the rate of inflation to get the real GDP that gets reported, you know, the 6.4%. Actually, you know, when you look at quarter, not annualized, but quarter, the first quarter grew only by 1.6%. Not 6.4, 1.6% over the fourth quarter. Well, that's a long way from 6.4, isn't it? 1.6%. The number is there, but the media doesn't like to report that. Doesn't look as great, right? 1.6% growth, that's less than the average growth that occurred for every quarter for the previous decade. You know, the economy grew about 1.8% every year under Obama and early years of Trump. Yeah, no big deal, no big growth. That's the norm, the average, 1.8%. Well, it only actually grew 1.6% last quarter. You know, 2021, January, March. Not 6.4%. 6.4% was when you manipulate the number and using annual rates, assuming over 12 more months or 12 months total that this is what it would be given on what it was. Well, you know, that's just speculation. We don't know exactly what the next 9 months is going to be. We don't know. It could go either way. It could go up or it could go slow down and go down. So, you know, you got to take into consideration the way the media hypes this stuff and cherry picks different statistics from the U.S. government to feed it to the media to make the economy look better than it is or not as bad as it actually is. And that's the problem with annual rates, you see. Fourth quarter of 2020, the actual growth was only 1.1%. That had fallen from the 7.4% of the third quarter. You know, we collapsed 10.5% first half last year. We gained back a little more, 7%, and then that completely, the bottom fell out again, and fourth quarter is only 1.1%. And again, all of these numbers, even the 10 and the 7 and the 1.1 and a 1.6 here now, you know, which are better than annual rates, even those are overestimated because of the way we underestimate inflation and the inflation adjustment that we make to nominal GDP. You see, GDP is simply the total goods and services that are produced in a given year or quarter and sold. Got to be sold, right? Total goods and services, produced and sold. So imports that come in, you know, aren't produced in the U.S., they're sold, but that number is subtracted from GDP. You know, conversely, exports, you know, that were produced in the U.S. and sold are part. But because we import more than we export, we get a negative number for the trade balance that has to be subtracted from GDP. And, of course, that's been continuing. You know, the trade balance is whacking GDP. Okay, so let's get to the composition of first quarter GDP here. What do we got? Well, another interesting thing, apart from this, you know, actual quarter or annual rate nonsense, right, is that it was mostly manufactured goods, you know, actual goods, durable goods, non-durable goods that you use, not services, but goods. You know, the goods sector of the economy has been doing quite well even during the collapse here of last year. It's been growing. The goods sector is manufactured goods and construction. And construction can be household construction or commercial property construction. Household residences, right? Residences would be single-family homes or apartments. Commercial property real estate construction, you know, are the growth of factories, hotels, malls, resorts, that kind of stuff, right? Theme parks, you know, office buildings, you know, except for factories, which grew a little bit. All the rest of the sectors of real commercial property, real estate, have contracted. So, you know, that's not a good sector. But we have the residential housing, which has boomed because of the near zero interest rates. And that has offset some of that commercial real estate collapse. Okay, so manufacturing goods, if you take the 6.4% annual rate, 4.9% of the 6.4% was goods increase. Goods increase. Of course, it's not 6.4, so it's not 4.9. It's really something probably less than one proportionally. Well, maybe about 1%. You know, if the real quarter number is about 1.5%, maybe a little less, and, you know, the lion's share of first quarter GDP is goods, then, you know, you're probably saying about 1%, maybe a little bit more increase in goods in the first quarter of this year. Again, the real number is 1.6%. Apart from this fact that inflation overestimates it, 1.6%, not 6.4. But if you say 6.4, then manufactured goods or goods are 4.9% of 6.4. So if you look at it in a real quarter basis, it's about 1%. That's the lion's share. Services are really stagnant. Very, very small services growth here in the first quarter. You know, of the 6.4, 2.1%, you know, about almost a third of goods production increase was services increase. And typically, services contribute far more than goods to GDP. Look, the economy in terms of goods production, only 20% of the U.S. economy is goods production. I mean manufactured stuff and housing, construction, right? Manufacturing is about 12% of the economy, contributes on average 12% to GDP every year, and construction, maybe 8%. But of course, real estate, commercial real estate, commercial property has collapsed. So you got is housing, and so that's maybe 6%, 5%. They're about split, residential housing and commercial real estate as the total of construction activity. So, maybe 18% of the U.S. economy now is goods, discrete goods, manufactured items, and construction, housing. Right? Services is 80% of the U.S. economy in good times, 80%. Right? Well, it's barely growing first quarter here. Of course, it collapsed totally last quarter, barely growing here. Another important element in first quarter GDP is the continued decline, collapse and decline, contraction, actually, of business inventories. Over last year, 2020, business isn't going to build inventories. When it was pretty clear people couldn't buy much in terms of services in particular, but even in terms of manufacturing. So businesses cut their inventories, right? Which means the inventories, are very, very low, which when the economy rebounds and reopens as it is now, you got a supply problem. You got a supply of goods problem. And we all know in the ABCs of economics, when you have a decline in supply, i.e. inventories, it's easy to raise prices. And that's what's going on. Businesses are recouping prices that they couldn't raise last year and, in fact, had to cut prices, deflation last year. So now they're scurrying to raise prices. And it has nothing, virtually nothing to do with, the checks that people are getting. It's not demand that's driving up prices. It's contributing some, but it's a supply problem that's driving up prices as well. But you don't hear them talk about the supply side problem, just the demand side increase assumed. All right, well, that's just a comment on inflation. Yeah, we're going to have inflation, no doubt. Business is going to try everywhere to test the market, to raise prices and see how much they can get out of it. And they're already doing that. We're already seeing that, of course, in gasoline, for example, people driving now more, commuting again, once again. The price of cars, there's no discount on cars anymore. People are scooping up cars, at full price. And a whole host of other things, food things and so forth, right? So prices, we're going to see inflation, probably more than what the Fed's talking about here short term, certainly more than 2.5%. And remember, once again, if you underreport inflation, you overreport GDP. And that's going on. And that always goes on in the economy, right? But the point I'm trying to make is that the trade balance is still negative. In other words, detracts, from GDP, and inventories are now a big contraction of GDP. What do we get in the annual rate in the 6.4% annual rate GDP first quarter in terms of business investment? Only 1.3%. of the 6.4% was actually businesses increasing investment. Yeah, business is not jumping out there and expanding. If you use the more accurate, 1.6% quarterly GDP growth, not the annual rate nonsense, then you're going to get business investment increasing only a couple tenths of a percent in the first quarter. Very little. And the same for government spending, very little in the first quarter. Now, that'll pick up significantly here in the second quarter and second half of the year, government spending. But, it's pretty nominal. and even housing's contribution, because again, there's a supply problem in housing, residential housing. You know, they can't get the materials. The prices are going through the roof for lumber and everything. They can't build houses quick enough for the demand because people want to get the hell out of the cities. You know, the middle class, upper middle class that can afford it, work from home, you know, they're getting out of the cities. Big boom in the suburbs outside the major, urban areas. You know, New York, they're moving to New Jersey, they're moving to Long Island, et cetera. In California, they're moving out of the Bay Area, they're moving out of L.A., right? Trying to get to a place that maybe the next COVID won't hit, right? And to get away from all these terrible commutes that they're doing, you know, in the inner city. Work from home. That's something that we're going to see is going to be permanent for a lot of occupations, particularly in tech and places like that, right, where you're not physically building something. Business investment, very low still. Government spending, low, but probably will surge. Housing, big supply problem there. Trade deficit, not good. Still in, reducing total GDP. Inventories, well, we'll see whether that builds up, but that's been a negative in the first quarter. Services barely recovering in the first quarter. Still, we'll see whether it opens up. Mostly manufactured goods. That's what we're seeing, right? And what else can we say about the GDP, right? Let's look at some of my notes here, right? Household savings are really up. And, you know, it's assumed, well, if you got savings, you're going to spend a certain percent of it. Savings are over $4 trillion now compared to a similar period first quarter last year, $1.2 trillion. But you got to remember that most of that savings is skewed to the higher household income groups. You know, the average and below income groups for the working class. They haven't hoarded this money. You know, a lot of these checks and other things, spending that has occurred over 2020 with these relief bills, people still working just socked it away or paid down debt, right? Corporations and businesses did that too. There's a mountain of hoarded cash out there, both in households and in businesses especially. So simply because there's $4 trillion in the savings pool doesn't mean it's all going to be spent, because people who are wealthier don't spend all of their savings. You know, if you're making $30,000 a year, you're not saving anything. You're spending it all. Right? So you got no savings. You're not adding to the savings pool. But if you're making a couple hundred thousand a year, you know, a lot of people in tech and me, upper middle class, they're not going out and spending that. they're sitting on it, or they're paying down debt, right? The goods sector, goods production, manufacturing, and housing, right, is above where it was at the end of 2019. It's above 13%. It grew because people spent on ordering stuff while they were, stuck at home. So services sector, right? Services sector is still below where it was in 2019. So the goods sector, 20% of the economy, is above where it is, and the services sector, 80% of the economy, is below where it was in 2019. But remember, the goods sector is only 20% of GDP, and services is 80%. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind here about this consumer spending going forward is that these checks that go out pretty much get spent or saved, hoarded, pretty quickly. The effect on the economy is very short term. You know, the second round of checks that went out at the end of December, $600, were clearly dissipated by the end of February. They were either spent or socked away, one or the other. So their effect, it was not long-term on the economy. And we're going to see the same thing with the $1,400 checks. You know, that'll give a boost into the second quarter, but a lot of that will be hoarded by those who had jobs and have higher incomes and will have been spent by those who don't have higher incomes or still don't have jobs, okay? So actual consumer spending in the first quarter on goods, remember, consumers' consumption is like two-thirds of the economy, two-thirds of GDP. So the actual spending on goods went up 5.4%, but on services only 1.1% in the first quarter, right? But if you talked about this in annualized rates, you'd see goods spending up 41.4%. Nonsense. You know, again, to summarize them, my points here is that forget this annualized rate nonsense. Ignore the stats that say annualized rate. Unfortunately, you get a lot of that in the media. Ignore it. You know, it's just obfuscation. It's distortion. You got to look at what it is quarter to quarter, not on an annualized basis. And always keep in mind that even those quarter-to-quarter numbers are distorted by an underestimation of inflation effect on GDP. Right? Those are two important things about when you look at GDP and you talk about GDP. You know, the economy and the services is still in trouble. We'll see how much of that can be alleviated here over the summer. But, you know, travel and transport, air travel and so forth, is still down 23% over 2019. Recreation, 31% down. Restaurants, 23% down, right? Commercial property, construction, business structures, 19% down. State and local government spending, 4.3% down from 2019 level. You know, these sectors I just mentioned that are down are over $500 billion total, less than it was in 2019. Okay, so, you know, we do have a rebound going on, no doubt. But the rebound is from mostly reopening the economy. It's not because of the stimulus. The stimulus is dissipated from the $600 checks. You get some of it. Well, I don't think the $1,400 checks got in time for first quarter numbers. That will hit the second quarter. That will have an impact. But it's not the government spending. It's not the government programs that have hit the economy here in the first quarter. No, it's just the reopening because of the vaccines mostly, you know, and sort of mitigating the COVID effect, at least in some states regionally. Others where people, you know, aren't getting vaccinated, won't wear a mask, that, you know, there are pockets of problems with COVID. And the other thing to keep in mind, COVID is all these mutant strains. You know, whether they come from India or Brazil or UK or whatever, you know, if the rest of the world does not quickly get vaccinated, it doesn't look like they will. We run the risk of these new strains continuing to pop up. And at some point, one of these strains is not going to be controlled by the vaccines that we've been taking. That's going to be a big problem. You know, the possibility of that is, you know, not great, but it is there. Now, we could have another COVID wave in the U.S. should that happen. Should the rest of the world lag and we get new mutant strains that our current vaccines do not mitigate. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens there. Possibility. I'm not saying likely. So to wrap up on the GDP picture here, you know, it's not 6.4. It's really 1.6 or less, right, because of inflation distortion. Yeah, it's the good sector that's booming, but the good sector can't keep growing at that rate, you see. No, it's going to slow down. Its contribution to first quarter GDP will not be as great in the second quarter. Now, but conversely, maybe the services will pick up in terms of its contribution. But we still have these issues of the trade imbalance dragging GDP numbers in subsequent quarters coming up, and a big question mark about what will happen with inventories. Will inventories now grow instead of contract as they have been? And then, of course, finally, you got whether it's 1.6% or whether it's 6.4%, that's GDP. GDP is not a truly accurate picture of the economy. Yeah, it's the only thing we got to, guesstimate roughly. But there's a lot of problems with GDP. We talked about some of them already. You know, the inflation adjustment is underestimated, right? Annualized rates and so forth. I'm not going to go into a GDP criticism here. I could spend an hour on that. but keep in mind, there were still 20 jobs short, 20 million jobs short, right? Not 8 million, 20 million. Just count the people getting benefits and those who dropped out, 20 million. Long way. Well, that's the nature of a Great Recession, the second of which we're in here in the 21st century. Takes a long time to get the jobs back. Long time. It's not going to be in 2022. It's going to be years, as it was before, to get the jobs back. And they'll probably come back at lower wages as they did before. Okay, let's move on to Biden's plan here, the family plan, family leave plan that he just announced. Think of this as the third leg of the fiscal spending program stool that's being proposed by Biden. The first one being an American Rescue Plan, sometimes called COVID relief. The second being the infrastructure plan, sometimes called the American Jobs Plan. And, of course, now the third leg, the American Families Plan. The thing to keep in mind here is that the rescue plan, the COVID relief, is an actual law. That's been passed. Reportedly, it was supposed to be $1.9 trillion, and you still get that number peddled around in the media. But it was really $1.8 trillion over 10 years. Maybe eight, I forget, 8 or 10 years, $1.8 trillion. How much of that is actually proposed to be spent here in 2021? Well, according to the Congressional Budget Office, Research Arm of Congress, only at most $1 trillion. That's not counting what will be hoarded. At least 20% will be hoarded. So actually hitting the economy would be about $800 billion. That's the only true government stimulus hitting the economy in 2021. That's all it's going to be. The other two legs, whether we're talking about the American Jobs Plan, i.e. infrastructure, or whether we're talking about this family leaves plan, those are longer term proposals. And they're not law yet. They're subject to a lot of negotiation. You won't even get the infrastructure plan, whatever it ends up being, passed until 2022. You won't see that pass until next year. And the same thing I would guess here with the American Families Plan. This is a longer term stimulus. Infrastructure, longer term. Families plan, longer term. Rescue plan is the only short term. Well, important to keep in mind for what will the effect be on the economy and on the deficit and the debt, you see. Opponents of all these plans, like Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell and others, say, we can't afford it, deficits. Well, even if it is, does hit the deficit, it won't be till late 2022, 23, should they pass. And they will not pass in current proposed form. They will be much reduced. Okay. Now, the media is running around, just read Wall Street Journal, New York Times, all that, and they're saying, oh, these three programs are $6 trillion. Whoa, 1.9, right, for the rescue plan, 2.3 trillion for the infrastructure plan, and 1.8 trillion here for the families plan, 6 trillion. Well, those aren't the actual numbers in reality. Like I said before, the Senate knocked off $100 billion from the COVID relief rescue plan, really $1.8 trillion, and only about 0.8 will get spent this year, and the rest over a period of 10 years. The infrastructure plan, they're saying it's 2.3, no. In fact, it's almost impossible to estimate what it is because there's still questions as to how much will be spent where, but no more than $2 trillion, not $2.3 trillion. And the families plan, about $1.5 trillion, not $1.8 trillion. The media is pumping this stuff up. Well, okay, so a little over $5 trillion versus $6 trillion, it's still a lot of money, right? Well, how is it going to be paid for? How are these three plans going to be paid for? Well, part of it will be, and Biden is leaking out, item by item. Part of it will be rolling back Trump's 2018 massive tax cuts for investors and corporations and businesses and wealthy individuals. $4.5 trillion, I've always said, because they underestimate the tax cuts for U.S. offshore multinational corporations. They overestimate revenue from massive GDP growth of 3% plus every year for 10 years. And of course, we know that was destroyed last year. Other areas that they lowball the Trump tax cuts, which, are really $4.5 trillion. About $2 trillion of that really going to U.S. multinational corporations, you see, who are supposed to be paying 35% on their foreign profits, but under Trump would only pay 10.5%. Yeah, 10.5% at most. Even that 10.5% would be reduced by how much a given U.S. multinational corporation paid a foreign government. And there are different ways that they could minimize even that. So maybe they paid 5% if they paid anything on their foreign profits. Right? So that was like $2 trillion over 10 years. The official cost, the official media peddled number was $1.5 trillion of Trump tax cuts. No. It was easy, $3.5 trillion plus another trillion possibly that has to do with lack of economic growth and tax revenue generation. Okay, so rolling back the Trump tax cuts, $4.5 trillion, and how was that proposed? Well, raising the U.S. domestic base corporate tax rate back up from Trump's 21% to 28%. You see, Trump cut it from 35 to 21. Whoa, what a big cut, right? Well, Biden's going to raise it halfway back to 28. To restore some of the alternative minimum tax on corporations, the AMT tax, Trump got rid of it altogether. That's for companies, huge companies making billions of dollars who get away from paying anything. And, there are scores of them with great profits got away from paying for anything under Trump. Well, they're going to have to pay something. That's what the AMT is about. The capital gains tax, cut to 20%. capital gains from selling stocks and bonds, you see. Well, that will be raised, according to Biden, back up to what's called earned income rate, which is, you know, up in upper 30%, but only for people making more than $400,000 a year in income. Inheritance tax, that was really gutted. You know, only 0.3% of the population of households pay this tax, but since these people paying the tax are so super wealthy, it brings in a nice chunk of money revenue for the federal government. Well, Trump had increased the exemption to the first $23 million of your estate gets exempted, you know, for two people. You know, increase that exemption by tens of millions of dollars over what it was in 2009. Well, Biden's going to restore it back to 2009 levels, which I think is something like 2.3 million exemption instead of 11.4, something like that. The foreign taxation be increased up to 20% instead of the 10.5% foreign corporate tax. What does this total come out to? I haven't seen an estimate yet. Maybe the Congressional Budget Office will provide that, but I haven't seen it yet. So I don't know, you know, how much of the alleged $6 trillion, actual about $5 trillion of these three fiscal spending programs will be offset by these proposals of Trump, I mean, Trump, of Biden to roll back the Trump tax cuts. In part, it's not a total rollback, you see. And some of the most egregious loopholes and tax cuts of Trump will remain, you know. Most notably, there's no attempt by Biden to reverse the small business tax cuts. Small business meaning business income, not corporations. You know, the vast majority of businesses in the U.S. are not corporations. They're proprietorships and partnerships. Well, Trump really cut those back to virtually nothing here, and the rate very, very low. Biden's not touching that at all. You know, just as he's not touching individual income taxes below $400,000, he's not bothering that politically. You know, this is tactics to get this thing passed. Attack the big corporations, attack the very wealthy, which is rolling back some of the Trump tax cuts. How much? We don't know. He's also proposed, Biden, to fund the IRS to go after unreported and misreported business income, right? To provide, I think, $80 billion to beef up the IRS to go after what's estimated at $700 billion of avoided taxes and misreporting on business tax forms, right? Unreported, not reporting income, and misreporting income, right? According to the IRS, 55% of all business income is either underreported or misreported. 55%, right? They're not even putting it on paper, you see. They're taking 55% of what they would owe, and they're just, businesses are, and they're just sort of like moving it aside, you know? We're skimming that off the top. We're not reporting that for tax reasons, and we're keeping that money, 50%, 55%, you know. So the idea is to go after that by beefing up the audits, the IRS audits on corporations and the super wealthy. But I don't think even that $700 billion is going to be enough, nor the unknown yet taxing tax rollbacks here of Trump to cover the spending that's proposed in these three fiscal bills. They're going to have to borrow again. You know, Treasury's going to have to issue more bonds. The problem is the Treasury's already issuing so many buying so many bonds back to keep interest rates super low, you know. How's it going to do this? You know, if it's buying back bonds, how's it going to sell bonds to raise money when it's buying back bonds at $120 billion a month. Yeah. In other words, the Federal Reserve is throwing $120 billion every month at the banks to lend and to hoard whatever the banks do with it. Yeah, as if the banks needed bailing out. You know, why are we pumping $120 billion into the banks and into junk companies? Just to keep interest rates low, you see? That's what it's all about. Okay, so what's in the family, American family's plan? You know, we've talked about details in the rescue plan in previous shows. We talked about the details of what's in the infrastructure plan in previous show. So what's the composition of the family's plan? Well, it's really targeting consumption, household consumption. Keep that in mind. The infrastructure plan is really targeting business investment to stimulate business investment. You see, the COVID relief plan here, that's law already, was a short-term mitigation to put some money into households and small businesses, fill that hole that occurred during COVID in the 2020 year. And let's quickly fill that chasm of lost spending by small businesses and households. That's a short-term mitigation bill to buy time, you know, two to three, four months. That's what that was all about. The infrastructure plan was about restimulating the U.S. economy and business longer term. A good chunk of that, by the way, $400 billion, was really a kind of bribe and incentive for U.S. business to compete in the new technologies with China, especially, right? Where a couple hundred billion of that, the government will build out the charging stations for electric vehicles, you know, 500,000 of these. And, of course, big subsidies to U.S. Big corporations to develop and continue to develop electric vehicles, electrification, electric vehicles, electric transport, all of that involved. And to compete with China, you know, new semiconductors, AI semiconductor chip competition. Well, we talked about that. It's really about the tech war. You know, Trump went after China in the tech war, really about next generation technologies, as I said many times, with the stick, the tariff stick, right? Didn't work. So now what Biden is doing, think of it in terms of, okay, the stick didn't work against China, so we're going to throw a big carrot at U.S. corporations to be more competitive. That's what that's about. The war, tech war with China goes on. The trade war with China goes on. It's just a different tactic of how this strategy will be implemented to check and thwart technological development with America's number one big challenger now in the world. Okay. Composition of the American Families Plan, again, longer term, won't get passed probably this year, but targeting not business investment and expansion technology, but giving some longer-term support to consumer spending, household consumer spending, longer-term support, right? The rescue plan, the COVID plan, is short-term consumption support. Put money in the hands of people so they can start spending. The American Families Plan is longer-term support for households and consumption. Infrastructure for business investment, but families plan for households and consumption. Tax credits for child care, elderly care, and earned income tax credits cost $600 billion. Further credits, in other words, putting money in the hands of folks to purchase Obamacare, you know. Why? Well, because the premiums have risen and people can't buy it as much. Well, you know, we're going to give them more tax credits so they can spend more on health care. That's about $200 billion. Paid family leave. You know, U.S. is the only industrial country that has terrible paid family leave provisions. You know, you go to most of the European countries, and you know, you have a kid, you get paid leave for a year or more. You know, at least 4 to 6 months paid leave, and then some countries even more generous than that, because they recognize, you know, the parents have to be with the kid, you know, when they're very small and very formative and fragile. Well, the U.S. doesn't do that. Well, this proposal would be to bring the U.S. more in line with other, you know, advanced countries here, economic countries. So paid family leave, $225 billion. Child care support, very important. You know, a lot of women in the families just can't afford to go to work because the wages are so low and the cost of child care is so high, you know, they'd be making nothing. So they have to stay home and take care of the young children. I'm talking about young children, you know, up to 4 or 5 years old. You want to get those people into the labor force working, but they can't afford to. You know, it's a negative net result for them. So paid child care, you know, is important. Government support for child care is an economic necessity now. Economic necessity. Two years of community college, free community college, long way from the proposal for free college education, but it's a start, $109 billion. Free preschool, $200 billion, you know, and increase in support for universities and Pell Grants and so forth, $131 billion. So you add this up, you know, the tax credits, child elderly, ACA tax credit, paid family leave, child care support, community college, preschool, miscellaneous, you get about $1.6 trillion. That's the American Families Plan, right? But remember, it's long-term household consumer support. Won't hit the economy this year. Probably won't even get passed. The same thing with the infrastructure bill. Over $2 trillion long-term business investment support. Won't hit the economy until 22, maybe 23. You know, these are great ideas, but they're on paper. They're not going to stimulate the economy. The only thing stimulating the economy is the rescue plan, which will dissipate after another 2-3 months. They're betting that the economy now with the vaccines and COVID control will reopen. Now, most of the growth will be from reopening, but it's not really growth. It's recovery, not sustained. It's reopening. You see, that's not growth, in my opinion. Growth is what you add on top of what you had when you went into the hole in the contraction. That's growth. This is restoration of the economy. And all of this GDP numbers, even overhyped, but even not overhyped, you know, are really restoration economic activity. It's not real growth, in my opinion. It's not sustained recovery. It's rebound. We will see in the second half whether rebound can be sustained recovery with only less than $1 trillion government stimulus, net stimulus. Whether the economy can really open, a lot will depend upon what happens with COVID and vaccines and mutants and so forth. Okay, so that puts all of this in some perspective, the GDP numbers, as well as these government plans. And it's not as rosy and sanguine as they seem on paper and as the media reports. All right, that's it. I'm on. I'm gone.